This is the September 15 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, Elaine Cove of Mastering the Grain Markets of Elkhorn, Nebraska, and our special guest, Jerry Goodell of Price Futures Group. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Let's begin our conversation with this very basic question. How is it that producers should consider marketing their new crop corn this season? Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
You know, I think at this point, you know, when I look ahead, the one thing I've kind of thought about here and I've kind of approached to a lot of producers with, especially if they have stuff they have to store commercially, is to put it on basis contracts. I look at some of the timing structure that I follow, and I've got a low due out roughly around New Year's that tends to be a fairly significant low. I don't know that it's going to be lower than where we are here in the fall. But I think going through the fall, we may not see the market have a lot of upside energy. And no matter the crop size, it's still big. So that really wouldn't be a shock. So to me, it's getting the pricing opportunity on the other side of that. So I've told a lot of people to pursue a basis contract. Some people I know are using some deferred pricing contracts. But I think, you know, the next good opportunity to price corn could be out into late winter, early spring. So I'm gearing up to hold things long haul again if I can. And the basis contract, the beauty of it is you get rid of the corn, you avoid the storage charge, and you get about 70% of the value up front on most of those. So it's a way to satisfy cash flow needs and still have pricing opportunity in place.
What makes that work and what makes it not work? So what do you look for in the market structure that allows you to use a basis contract for corn at this time of year?
Well, the best thing that makes it work, if you don't have much carry in the market, you know, and we do have a fair amount of carry. If you look at DSON up into the May contract, you're at 17 cents. If you go to July, it's about another 7 cents. So I guess I'd place it up against the May, and that carry works against you. But if I'm storing it commercially, that carry itself is really less than what it is to store the crop for the most part in an awful lot of places. So I look at those two as a wash. But the danger we run against this year with the corn market is that we have one of those markets where your spot market, your cash market, just kind of moves along sideways. And so those forward months with the carry come down to it. So that is, there is some risk, and there is risk that, you know, we could lose some value. But I don't think we really take any more value out of it than what the cost of the storage is going to be, maybe just a little bit more. So I really don't think there's a whole lot of risk in it if I really don't want to sell any corn now and I have the willingness to hold on to this stuff on a long-term basis.
So this brings me to Elaine Cove and maybe the weather forecast that you mentioned as a possibility that we should discuss, and whether it would have an impact on the marketplace if we have some rain delays in the market. Will this make, and I don't know whether you agree with the basis contracts or not, make it easier for a farmer to use that in the coming weeks?
Possibly. And I think Dale is talking more about corn than soybeans here, but I think, you know, you have the opportunities for sort of early ship beans, or at least what I'm seeing in some of the basis bids out in the Western Corn Belt. They really start to fall off by the end of September, obviously. So if you did have some sort of a sudden bump up in concern about the quality and the delays from wet weather in the central and eastern and sort of northern tier of the Corn Belt, I wonder if that would not sort of bump up the prices. And I'm worried, as Kurt mentioned, with the $3 support. I certainly think that the corn market could fall down there, but I'm wondering, do we have any upside based on this weather report? And out here in the Western Corn Belt, we're good and dry. I mean, I'm really looking forward to harvesting in South Dakota. You know, we have the sloughs or the prairie potholes that ordinarily just make it a logistical challenge to drive a grain cart through a field, but this year it's going to be dry. So I'm not really in the best position to say. I'm really more interested in you know, what kind of things you're seeing out there in the Eastern Corn Belt, if anybody is worried about the pace of the harvest or the quality concern.
Jerry Goodell, you've probably been on the line with a few folks and talking with some elevator managers. Are they worried that this crop will all come in very, very quickly?
I'm not sure. I think there's an idea the harvest is going to proceed at a somewhat normal pace. I'd have to say, though, that it's a little bit delayed from what up until this point. Particularly, this is all coming from the pressure on the overall market. So you're talking about what's happened for the Booz Allen South. That area down there did not have their typical kind of August, early September harvest because of the heavy rains that hit the rice and hit the Louisiana and other areas there. And it slowed down the bean harvest to some extent and the corn corn scenario there too. And so I think that it's created a little bit of a pressure, and particularly the heavy rains that have occurred in the August and early part of September have been eastern Missouri on Illinois and Indiana, not so much Ohio, Kentucky, those areas. So, you know, it's an area of concern. I think the interesting thing about the quality is really something that's, I've heard all different kinds of quality issues across Illinois. I know you have too, Todd, about what's pockets are just really having some problems with the, and other areas are not so bad. But I think that's going to be an interesting situation, and particularly if you happen to be in a sell or not sell situation, that could force some people's hands. You really can't store some of that stuff on farm storage and try to get moved. Unfortunately, that does open up an opportunity for people getting some big discounts, and I think that is unfortunate. But I'm not sure how to tell somebody to avoid that on the type of things I've heard about the problems that are out there. You're talking, you know, this 10 and 15% kind of damage situations.
So we do hear about this diplody and some other things that have been problems in the corn. However, I'm wondering whether that makes very much of a difference other than the discount. What do you think, Kurt? I know it's a problem for the person harvesting, for the person maybe buying that grain, but does it really have a larger impact on the marketplace?
Well, we'll see how widespread it is. It seems like it's what we're hearing Central Illinois to Western Illinois. There's a fairly good pocket, but gosh, we've heard stories of guys taking over $2 discount on some of this damage. For the most part, you know, the elevator can work with it, but those guys are going to move it. They don't want to have to worry about that. So we're in a situation where some type of replacement strategy would be in order for that, especially if you have to pay some type of commercial storage. But not only the situation of diplodia, you know, we're working with the, you know, elevators concerned to be full here as we move into this fall. Also, too, lenders, they're in a situation where they're not wanting to take on any additional risk as we move forward here. So producers are going to be put in a situation, they're going to be really bleeding the bad about, you know, equity and cash flow. So we've got a lot of things to look at too as we go into this winter here.
So as we looked at the numbers that came out from the United States Department of Agriculture on Monday for the world agricultural supply and demand estimates along with the crop production figures, they put the yield at 174.4, production at 15.093 billion bushels, carry out at 2.384, with a cash price of 320 for the whole of the marketing year. Will these change very much, do you think, in the next month? And what are the numbers that are more likely to change? And I suppose maybe we'll start with you, Elaine.
Well, as you know, Todd, I did some looking into how much this surprised the market to see some of these numbers. And obviously, the soybeans were the big surprise this month. And I think there is potential for them to continue to surprise in upcoming months. I mean, I think there is potential just looking at the state of the crop, how well and resilient the yields are throughout the entire country. I think there's potential for the USDA to bump the soybean yields up further. And, you know, that carries all the way through into your ending stock numbers. But the corn yield, I mean, like I said, I am worried about some of these quality issues and how that might weigh on yield. And maybe it is just a matter of backyarditis or just seeing the pictures on Twitter of the, you know, sprouted ears of corn in north central Iowa. I mean, these things do exist. It's not a perfect crop, and so it will be a record-breaking crop, but not a perfect crop. So I think, in my opinion, there's potential for the USDA to trim the corn numbers, but maybe bump up the soybean numbers.
Anybody else have a different idea about whether this crop size could come down more sharply than expected? Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities?
I would think probably in this 172 area, it could probably pull back a bushel or two, but the other part is there's quite a bit of talk that we could actually see acreage go up anywhere from a half to 1 million acres. So that could be an effect on the bottom line also.
And these would be based on the FSA numbers that are also released about the same time that the USDA figures come out. Dale, have you been taking a look at some of those FSA figures?
I have been, you know, and I've looked at the internal details of the USDA report, and I still hold out there's a reasonable chance to see the corn yield drop just under 170. We've still got a real huge ear weight tagged on this at this point, and understanding the USDA process and the interference I think we're getting from these high crop condition ratings themselves is kind of distorting the producer aspect of the surveys we're getting. But even beyond that, just looking at the ear count itself and knowing that it goes sideways to lower in the later reports and still seeing that the ear weights themselves seem to be high, and I can't justify that given the heat we had this summer. And it wasn't desperately hot, but it was warmer than normal, which trims up your kernel filling time window in there that you got some real risk. And I'm kind of wondering if part of the big bean yields themselves are not a function of those expectations, even for corn with the high crop ratings themselves. Bean ratings stayed up reasonably well, not quite as high as corn. So, you know, our producers really reading well what is out there. And I look at the state of Illinois, a 61 bushel bean yield, that's huge. You know, and if you go back to the prior records that we had prior to 2012, before we lifted here in 13, well, really 14, 15, and now 16, you know, we've had from peaks we had prior to the 2012 drought, we've lifted bean yield 16%. That is a huge shift. I mean, just a huge shift. And Scott Irwin on the piece that he did for the U of I on Farm Doc was saying, you know, a departure from trend, depending on whether you look at it in absolute bushels or percent of trend, is either the first or second largest we have ever had in history. And so I still think there's a bit of a distorted picture in here at this point in time that we've got to be careful about at this juncture. Corn, I feel real comfortable about it. Beans, you still don't know, because pod numbers themselves on the future reports will tend to go up a little bit, especially as we see the October. But once we see the October report, I think then we probably can get a pretty good feel where we'll be on pod count, and I think then we'll probably be able to see where we're at on pod weight. As far as acreage, I've looked at beans. I don't see any reason to make any adjustments there based on the September FSA numbers we had here this last week. The corn themselves, I think, you know, there's a half a million, but they won't do it all, so maybe they go up 200,000 to 300,000. I think this million-acre push people are talking about is really big. And a lot of people forget out there that the acreage numbers themselves, they're not a zero-sum game. We have volatility year in, year out in the whole acreage package. It ranges anywhere from 3 to 5 million acres. So, you know, I don't think we go up all that much more. And what we're really missing, you know, with the FSA numbers between there and the ones we get out of NAS is corn raised outside of the farm program. Folks, corn was cheap last winter. There wasn't incentive really to plant it here, even if you were going to have crop insurance to be able to apply against it. Why would you want to think there was incentive to raise corn outside of the program and not be able to put crop insurance on it. There wasn't any reason. So I don't think the acreage goes up. I think people are deluding themselves there.
Jerry Goodell, your expectations for any changes in the acreage or yield?
My perspective on the thing is that we had a very strong weather impact in the June period. We had significantly higher temperatures above average of the, I think, a pre-problem situation for corn. Then we went into the summertime here, and July was warm, but we started to get the rains. And that, interestingly enough, if you look at the August crop, temperatures in the Midwest, interestingly enough, we had plenty of rain, but we also had 4 to 6 degrees above normal. The normal situation really created some of this nighttime temperatures issues that I think is a factor. I'm going to be going out towards Western Illinois, and they've talked about how dramatically things have changed out that direction on the dry down. I think that's another sign of issues of, I think that the fill time on these corn is there. I'm in the 170 kind of range myself, at least very concerned that that could happen. Is that going to create a huge change? That takes you down to the 2 billion bushel carryover stock number. I think if we have to get down into the 167, 68 number, which we did do in 2010. We had that dynamic enough of a switch to make that bushels drop away, but I don't know where you get there. The beans, I guess I'm cautious because of the corn, and also just the fact that I've never been able to guess beans driving by. That's what we've been looking at here for 2 months. Unfortunately, the whole world's got clean beans. We all look at them now. We can't really tell any more than they're good or bad. And I think that, as Dale points out, I have the same problem about these looking at the crop conditions and trying to make them scientific into something that tells me what the yields are going to be. I hope that, you know, the logic says it should be there because of what the crop conditions are, but, you know, 6 foot tall bean doesn't always turn out to be a 65 bushels in your bin. So I guess we'll find out in the next 2 or 3 weeks to see what we're doing on this stuff. But I think right now this might be a year of less than expected coming from the field.
Elaine, Dale mentioned the ear weight for corn, and not this month, but the last month in August, that objective came out, and it was the biggest one that we've seen ever. However, this month, the soybean pod weight was also the biggest one we've ever seen ever. And we have yields in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, Kansas, Ohio, South Dakota, North Dakota, all up this month as compared to USDA from last month. The only place that didn't change was Nebraska, and it remains at a very large 59 bushels to the acre. Can you put it all into context?
Yeah, I mean, think about the seed technology that's going into there. Honestly, I think that's where it all comes down to, is that we may be at some point, you know, a few years from now, in an era where it hardly even matters what the weather does. I mean, it's not going to be, we're always going to care about weather, but I think that the seeds are so resilient, or the technology is so resilient and so well bred to produce these giant ears, heavy kernels, hopefully good pod weights, but like Jerry said, we really don't know yet. So I think it really comes down to technology, and that's sort of a broad truism for all commodities. You know, we worried that we were going to run out of oil, and then fracking came along, and we were able to get so much more energy out of the ground than we were previously. That's the same thing that's going to happen in grain commodities, or is currently happening in grain commodities. We worry about not being able to feed the world, but we are always going to be able to, you know, invent our ways into better and better production.
We are at a time of year that, generally speaking, we have lower markets, simply because we're in the midst of harvest. So I'd like each of you, and I'll start, Kurt Kimmel, with you, to give me an idea of what you think the next 2 or 3 weeks will look like. Can this market, if we have no delays in the weather, and maybe you can tell me that we're going to have delays and you have a different idea here, but what should this market act like as we begin the real harvest push?
Well, we assume everything's going to hopefully go as normal. We got enough problems to work through, but I'm going to go with the seasonal tendencies to kind of waller down and through here. If you do look at the daily price chart, we are trying to form a head and shoulders bottom in corn. Beans is not going to catch there probably, but kind of feel that by mid part of October, we get a good chunk of this harvest underway, that we could see that seasonal recovery as we move into this winter.
Well, I think the corn, because the one thing I do feel at this point, we're going to harvest an awful lot of corn before we harvest much beans because of the quality issues, because of stock issues in some places and stuff. So it wouldn't surprise me at this juncture to see the corn market drift sort of sideways to lower into October. Early October, I've got a very minor cycle low due at that point. But I think from there, we really rally. But, you know, my broad perspective is corn is stuck in a sideways range. It's broadly 3, 315 on the bottom and about 350 on top on the December contract. I don't see it going much anywhere between now and the end of the year. The beans themselves, where we don't harvest, if we really start to kick up our bean exports here at this point, and I think we're really slated to if we're going to ship what we've got on the books, I think beans have a chance to maybe rally here over the course of the next couple of weeks and get back up to the $10 mark. Now, with harvest still coming, and no matter the size, it's still a big crop, we'll probably see it set back a little bit. I think there's a shot in here that we've seen the low in beans, maybe even the low in corn, on nearby futures anyway.
Well, Todd, your original question is about the next couple of weeks, and I think it is almost universally true that you do get this harvest pressure and a harvest low, and it's going to really put a test on the $3 level in corn and probably maybe even fall below this five-month low of 937 in the soybean, November soybean chart. But after that, I mean, I think to summarize this whole conversation here, there's a lot of folks thinking that the corn yield should come back down maybe to that 170 level. There's a lot of potential for investment money to come into the markets, you know, especially if the Fed doesn't do anything crazy to the dollar. So I think there's a chance that after we put in a low that we could start to churn higher.
The dollar scenario and all that type of thing is definitely in the background of all these things at this point. From there, the seasonalities definitely are not on the positive here on the corn and soybeans this time of year. Weather-wise, some of your late September, early October things are pointing to potentially some more rain activity in some of these weather forecasts out there. So putting that back in perspective, I think the psychology of going down to retest the 315 is there. Will we get there or not? You know, I think that's depends a lot on things going on and on the progress of this crop and how things. And also, I think what kind of response we start to get from the country and the corn. I think the soybeans definitely the crop size is going to be important, but as Dale mentioned here, the need to push these beans through the system and get this accomplished, and there's minimal kind of South American access at this point. I think there's going to be some cushion in there. Outside risk, of course, is right now, today's a good example. We had a bean market rally off of stability here, of the fact that we didn't take it to new lows early, and then we had a crush statistic that was not all that impressive, that didn't break the market. Sometimes the fundamentals right now are not really influencing the market. It just seems to be trading back and forth, kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. I think it's all waiting to see if there's any kind of yields, confirmation of the yields, that good or bad, that's out there. Right now, I think there's a lot of uncertainty, even from the investing community.
Two other issues I'd like to take up: the grain stocks report coming up at the end of the month, and then what happens in South America and what we think their planting mix will be, especially in Argentina, based on the relief they had of the taxes on corn, and remaining apparently to leave some of those taxes on soybeans. They were supposed to phase out over a series of years for that one. So let's start with the grain stocks report. What is it, Dale Durkles, that we need to be concerned about? And I guess in the back of my mind, I keep thinking about wheat. Summer usage is generally a time when livestock producers might turn to wheat anyway, and it was really cheap this summer.
Yeah, it was really cheap. You know, the USDA is only plugged in for the marketing year itself, 330 million bushel of wheat for feed, and I still think it'll be upwards somewhere of about 400 million bushel when we get out to the end of the game. We've fed as much almost as 500 in the past. But they're really reluctant to raise it until we see where that stocks number is at the end of this month, which covers the first quarter. And I think that'll give them a better feel for how wheat feeding really is unfolding. But I'd say at this point, because wheat was so cheap, we did have wheat out in some places out west below the county loan. So there was an ever incentive out there to really feed wheat. But you just never know. The beans is going to be an interesting number because we're already working with a potential under 200 million. What if we end up not finding that many beans? It's really hard to tell at this point. I haven't gone through the exercise myself to come up with numbers yet for the end of the month reports. Corn, I don't think really matters as much because no matter what, we got a comfortable supply, whether it's old crop or new crop.
So that's one of the things I'm guessing that you're counting on for maybe a rally in the soybeans, isn't it? That the grain stocks for port will show bigger usage even than we expected in soybeans.
I'm not so worried, as much worried about it as I am the production numbers we see in October. That's the one I think is really much more important than the old crop stocks number.
Based on yield, then you think that USDA is too heavy on yield?
I do, simply because, and again, I'm looking at past history and trends between pod counts and pod weights. And, you know, I also understand when you get into the USDA yield numbers, you know, those reports are twofold. Half of that report is a yield based upon data they collect in the field. Half of that report is yields they get from their farmer survey. And, you know, that one you never know for sure, but I worry a little bit that this year farmers just been a little bit too optimistic.
Why do you think that's the case?
Part of it, I think, is just, you know, compared to when you and I were kids, you drive down the road, do you ever see a bad-looking bean field anymore?
Yes. Well,
not as far as any, though.
Well, from my perspective, as far as weeds go, but not is. With beans, no, not really. I'm just thinking about the amount of weeds that I see in the fields, and that's typically not been very good, especially in the state of Illinois this
year.
Well,
you don't see the kind of bean fields when you and I were kids. You really don't.
Wait, have you made note that the beans are so heavy that they at this point that there are ripples in the field?
What do you mean ripples?
High spots and low spots in the field. Where there aren't high spots and low spots, it's just that the beans are so heavy, they're bending down.
They're bending down. That can be a good thing and a bad thing, too, because, you know, with beans, and I've had people comment to me about how tall some of these beans are, how much energy did we put into vegetative growth this year? And the more energy you put into vegetative growth potentially robs energy you have to build seed size, too. You know, beans are a hard thing. I had an old client that has told me for years, he said, I'll tell you what my beans are going to yield when I pull in the field. And that's really true. You know, they're a hard thing to gauge. But when I look at the pod count numbers we're working with here, and I look at pod weights that we're working with here at this point, you know, I just see that we are just heavy. And we got to remember those pod weight numbers that you and I see, that's an implied pod weight. It includes both the yield ramifications of the data they collect in the field as well as the farmer survey. That's not an actual pod weight. And that does move around a lot.
Elaine Cupp, you've been listening to this for a while. What are you thinking about the size of the soybean crop and its condition?
Well, I think that, you know, you look at the summer that we've had, and I do still believe that there's certainly a chance that that number could still go up. And beans are really hard to judge. And I think we're just going to have to wait and see, you know, what literally, combine by combine, are the reports during the actual harvest time frame.
So why is it, and I guess, Dale, you've led part of this, and I think I understand, from your perspective, you believe that farmers in their answers to the USDA surveys have been too positive to the marketplace or to the size of their crop yield. But the rest of you seem to feel that might be the case for both corn and soybeans. Am I getting that right? Because I'm hearing that from farmers now too, that they just don't think this crop is as big as USDA is pegging it. And I suppose we'll find out in October.
We will find out in October. The October numbers are really a better number for both corn and beans, no doubt about it. And corn in October, so they'll have somewhere in the ballpark of about 30 to 40% of their sample plots, they'll strip ears. And so they'll have an idea on ear weight. We'll have a few, I don't remember what the number is, we will have some sample plots at that point in October where they'll be able to strip pods and measure pod weight, you know, which we don't have. So the USDA really starts to get some insight into how this process is unfolding on their own particular plots themselves. Without mentioning a year or anything, I remember back just a few years ago, you know, the USDA dropped their corn yield from September to October is something like about 6 bushels. And I asked them, I said, which yield changed the most? And the response I got back was, let's just say that farmers didn't quite have the crop they thought they had. Their sample plots had already picked up that they were high on their estimates, but the farmer still hadn't, you know, in September really picked up that, you know, he was looking for a crop bigger than what reality was. And beans are still a hard judge. Beans are the riskiest. I feel more comfortable talking about corn yield coming down to 170 or maybe less.
And that vein right there is the fact that the whole scenario in the corn that basically from the time we got the thing in the ground, we didn't have much of a problem this spring at all like we've had in past years, and particularly last year in the Eastern Corn Belt. And that now all of a sudden, once you get it past fence post high, and then we didn't have any outrageous 100-degree temperatures in the Midwest, and everything just seemed to level out. You just look at the last 3 years of crop conditions since we got away from 2012. They've come in and made this went sideways. I think, unfortunately, some of the reporters that we have in the system right now have really kind of lost their edge or something, rather. They're not checking out to get a feel for what it is. And it's hard to make a judgment. Once you get the corn past fence post high, it all looks the same. Beans, it's all looks like a lawn out there. I think that's our problem right now. Unfortunately, turning the satellites doesn't always help you either, because that doesn't really see inside the field. One of the problems that you hear from these guys is that they walk the center of the field, and that's where the heat and the humidity has caused these issues. Had some pollination problems, had some, you know, tipping issues, all those. You try to buy on the outside, these ears look fantastic. You know, I and another fellow from my company here went out and looked at them, and we saw lots of good fields driving down the field, down the roads. But when we got inside, they just weren't as strong as I thought they were going to be.
Let's get a final word from each of you. I think, Elaine Cubb, I'll start with you this afternoon.
Well, like I said, I'm really looking forward to seeing the actual harvest results, because like Jerry said, it's hard to know just before any harvest. But in the meantime, as always, I'll give my usual warning to watch out for the dollar. And next week there is coming up the potential for the Fed to do something about interest rates, and they probably won't, but if they did, it would be a surprise, and the markets would certainly react.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Well, most comments, beans particularly, echo what Dale said there, a little bit too much vegetated growth, so producers are a little uncomfortable with that. For corn, good, but maybe not as good as 2014. The tweet of the day, corn's fine, going to make 300 bushel easy, fantastic quality, as healthy as Hillary.
Jerry Goodell from Price Futures Group.
I'm not sure how you follow that particular one from there. The quick ideas on some numbers coming up. Today's crush statistic was about 10 or 12 million under what it projects to be to hit the 1.9. So we're going to have a little bit of a rise in that 195 to 205. Now, the big question is, what was an overestimate, underestimate type of thing? If it stays below 215, I don't think it makes a big difference one way or the other. I don't see it really kind of going down below 195. On the corn side of the numbers, the carryover is at 1.716. That one is vulnerable, I have to say, to some feed issues that we had earlier in the season, looking back at the June number, and that the USDA adjusted their number down. I think it's probably vulnerable for another 50 or 75 million. But in general, 1.7 1.7 or 1.75 or 7, 1.8 number is not going to change it. It really gets right back to these yields coming up in the October period as really being the interesting scenarios. This whole idea that I've looked at and Dale and I have discussed in other situations, I think really does become the real focal point as we go on through the rest of October and November.
And Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
You know, in the short term, one of the things I'd probably keep an eye on at this point is going to be the basis levels, either down at New Orleans or along the river itself. If we're really going to have a big bean export program here as we go into fall, winter, we have to start that shipping process here relatively quickly. And I'm talking roughly about the end of this month or beginning of October. So if we stall off harvest a little bit, cash basis levels are going to reflect that, and we're going to see some real strength in the cash market, or should. And I think the same thing probably proves true for corn, albeit we're going to harvest enough corn early, and I think that's where all the focus is going to be. We may not see it as much, but I'd keep an eye on what these weekly export shipments are. There's going to be a tail of the tape of what kind of demand we're going to have for the next 2, 3, 4 months.
We appreciate you all being with us. Of course, that's Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, along with Jerry Goodell from Price Futures Group in Chicago, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, and Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. I'm your host, University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to Commodity Week, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.